Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. My guest in the studio today, Dirk Powell. Besides, I always have loved his sense of humor. But besides that, Dirk began his career in studies with a focus on his Appalachian heritage, and he's since become one of the top traditional American musicians around. In addition to his solo recordings, Dirk has recorded and performed with artists such as Emmylou Harris, Levon Helm, Loretta Lynn, Jack White, Joan Baez, who he's currently doing some work with and has been for a while, Steve Earle, Chris Christopherson, Linda Ronstadt, and Jackson Browne. Dirk has also, which we're going to find out how he finds time for everything, but he's worked on numerous films with a number of acclaimed directors, including Ang Lee, Anthony Mangala, Spike Lee, Victor Nunez, and Steve James. He was a founding member of the Cajun group Buffa Toujours, and he's been regularly featured, which you can Google this on YouTube or watch it on YouTube, which is fantastic. Some of the work he did on the award-winning BBC series, The Transatlantic Sessions. Dirk Powell, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's good to have you here.
Wonderful.
You know, that's the thing that, I mean, and I've known you for a while, Dirk, but, you know, when you sit down and really start paying attention more so than you have to what has all come into somebody's life, it's a bit overwhelming with you in terms of everything that you're involved in and have been involved in. And I'm curious, if we step back a ways, I mean, there's, you know, there's so much that's gone on for you. When you see what's happening in your career right now, has there been any kind of very integral points where, wow, that's that turned it over for me, or this is where things really came together? Do you see that in your life at all musically?
I do. I mean, it's interesting, the combination of sort of doing the hard work and putting in the hours and learning the music as you would learn a language. I mean, becoming fluent in it, doing it enough to arrive at that point. And things like learning from my grandfather and appreciating somebody who played amazing music but worked in a steel mill for 40 years and never got to perform. And there's that kind of background to it, growing up in a musical household and feeling it, you know, inside from a young age and having an emotional connection to it and needing it to fill some holes and relying on music to...
Boy, that's a powerful statement right there.
Absolutely.
I mean, from a very young age. Yeah.
It was an oasis in my life from a very young age. And so there's that connection to it. But then, you know, I do look at some moments where just random luck comes into it too. Like when I started working with Ang Lee, there's a wonderful director and music supervisor named Alex Steiermark. And back when they had record stores, he was walking out of Tower Records, and he'd been looking for somebody to do these traditional parts in this Ang Lee film. And as he was walking out of the store, my record was in like a closeout bin, you know? And he grabbed it like, okay, well, I'll check that out. And that's, and he heard it, and he was like, well, that's what I want. So it's an amazing mix. That was total random
luck. So never feel bad about your piece ending up in a closeout bin.
Exactly. That's the best place for it, in that case. So it's interesting. I mean, it's a mix of feeling like this deep connection and having, you know, felt things and done things that make it such a core part of who I am that couldn't do anything else, really. But at the same time, I don't discount the fortunes and the way things have come into my life that have just been amazing. And, you know, I never, ever take it for granted, especially thinking about my grandfather, like I said, who was a really gifted musician.
Yeah. And he played what, Dirk?
He played banjo and fiddle and guitar and sang. And he was just somebody for whom music was his true love.
And was it around the house where he did that, or did he play out?
It was around the house, yeah. Okay. He played a few dances, and he used to tell me the stories about the house dances he used to have up in Kentucky, just like they had around here.
Yeah.
And he played some square dances. He played on the radio a little bit. But he gave it up because he had to provide for his family, and that was a choice he had to make. And he, like I said, he worked in a steel mill forever. And I don't perform, you know, a single night in my life where I don't think if he could have done this once, it would have made his whole life. If he could have received that kind of response for what he loved so much and what he gave, you know, what he gave of himself.
Yeah.
But it was never given back, really.
You know, Dirk, during, you know, that time when you were growing up And how old were you when your grand is your grandfather still alive? No.
No, he passed away when I was maybe 21 or 22.
Okay, so you had years with him, you know, not just being a young child. But was there ever those conversations where he talked about the importance of music to him and, you know, even maybe some of those, you know, regrets that I never got to take it? Would he converse about that?
He would, yeah, he would. He would talk about that, and he would, you know, wish me well and understand. We understood. By the time I was, you know, when he passed away, I was starting to play more, and I was traveling the world, and I was out there doing it.
Hmm.
And he got to understand that his music was living on through me.
Yeah.
And it really is. I mean, I feel like his spirit is still there, and I feel like he comes and joins me. You know, it's not, you know, it's not sort of abstract. It's like, wow, this is our music and this is our blood, and here we are.
Cool.
Bring it forth, you know.
What was your first instrument? I don't even know.
Well, I started playing piano as far as first, you know, formal training.
Yeah.
But I learned guitar and banjo and things like that without being conscious of learning them. I mean, they were just around the house. My father played and my grandfather played. So
okay.
I have a wealth of music that I don't ever remember learning. I don't remember ever not knowing it.
Yeah. You know? Wow, that's, I mean, now that's a statement.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't remember.
Yeah, I definitely don't. I don't remember never having known some of these things. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever, I'm curious, do you ever go a couple days without an instrument in your hand?
You know what, I do, and then I wonder why.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I sometimes you get busy with life, and maybe I'll come off the road. I will have been playing quite a bit and get home and start doing things that are caught up in daily life and bringing my girls to school and cooking them a few meals a day and cleaning up after those meals, you know, everything that you do. And sometimes I don't play music and I realize that I'm lacking the thing that is my sort of my whole place, you know, my place of completion.
Yeah, because when you talk about how powerful that is and that strong of a connection that you have, to me it would seem a person, you know, for 2 days, whoa, I got to get back, you know, almost like a panicky, not, you know, I don't know if that's the right word, but I need to grab something. I need to create something.
Yeah, I mean, I've realized lately that music, like I said earlier, was my original oasis, or it was my original way of just dealing with everything that life brings to you. It was, music was the place that I could resolve anything or feel anything or express anything. And I have realized that lately I've not been engaging with it in that way just for my own sake.
Yeah.
As much as I want to. So I'm actually playing more, and I'm feeling really good about that.
No, that's good. You know, the other thing I thought about is you spend, you know, when you look at your history and everything you're currently doing, you spend a lot of time collaborating with other people and playing for other people, you know, doing for that. I'm curious, when does, you know, how do you work in the time, or how does that process work where you work in the creation, like for Dirk, like Dirk's stuff?
Yeah.
You know, when does that come in?
That's an interesting balance. There's a great movie out right now called 20 Feet from Stardom about backup singers, the greatest backup singers in the world. Mm. You know, all these people that are on these amazing records, people that a lot of them had solo careers and then for various reasons, maybe they didn't pan out or, you know, and so the question is really raised in that movie, how do you balance your own solo thing versus supporting somebody else? And that really resonated with me because, like you just said, I have that same balance to strike, you know.
Yeah.
And one thing that's really beautiful, though, that's expressed in that movie is that to be in service to somebody or to something else is a really positive place to be. And that gets undervalued in our society, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not in the spotlight, if you're not out front, that those other supportive roles aren't celebrated in the same way. But, you know, I love being in the supportive role. I love being in the role of service. And that's one thing that I have with Joan Baez, where I love making music with her. What she brings is so strong and so beautiful and yet tender, yet powerful. And to play music with her, especially when it's just me and her, and just weave in with her and offer what I have to inspire but also support, I love that role, and I think that in some ways I feel like, oh, sometimes I should be doing my own blah, 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 more my own music or this or that. But actually accepting that in some ways I love being in that role of service is something that I feel like society should celebrate more.
That's
as opposed
right.
to, you know, celebrate the catchers instead of the pitchers
in terms
of their sports metaphor or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's a I'm not sure that that's the response I expected. That's a really good place to be in your life.
It is.
You know, it's
it
a really
is,
good
yeah.
place to
I love
be
it.
In.
I really do. And I also love having the chance to do my own thing.
Yeah.
But I recognize that, yeah, that just being in a place of how can I make this whole thing better, whatever it is.
Yeah.
What role can I step into, no matter what the role is, to make everything better and make everybody have a stronger experience? That's what I want to try to do.
Yeah, and you know, you look at you know, the success that no matter it doesn't matter if it's music or business or whatever you're in, that a lot of times none of that would happen unless you had at least one of those background people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, helping you in whatever way it is.
Yeah.
You know, huh? That's interesting, Derek. Good for you. Yeah, that's a cool place to be in. You know, when you look back in your early years, are there specific musicians that really stand out that had a profound influence?
Yeah,
when you
I
were
think,
younger.
I mean, there definitely was. You know, like I said, my grandfather and a lot of great old time musicians, and you know, Cajun Creole musicians, and people that I played with. And I think there's something that unites musicians that's, you know, above genre, which is, I always said, this ability to express like all the pain and all the joy of life kind of in one moment. You know, some musicians can express something that's so profound and you basically feel this saturation of emotion that's incredibly intense. But the joy wins out by like 51% to 49%. You know what I mean?
Huh.
And like, to me, that's what life is. Life, you know, the triumph of life doesn't happen with trumpet fanfares and big blasts and, you know, parades and stuff. I mean, the triumph of life is in these little moments where you accept that life wins, or
yeah.
we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I mean, we're here. Sometimes I say, well, this is the after party. Like, you made it here. Here we are. Let's go, you know. And the musicians that I really value, I think they transcend a lot of different genres. But they're the ones who can express all that at the same time, and yet there can be so much emotion in one note, you know, but yet that transcendent power of, like, affirmation of life is there, even if it's just in the tiniest degree, you know. And that's – there's a lot of musicians like Tommy Jarrell, an old-time fiddler, who was like that, and he really inspired me a lot because there's just so much truth and depth in his music. And I remember one time I was making a new record, and I was listening to – material, and I was trying to find some, maybe a new song to record. And so I was listening to some of his old records, thinking, well, maybe there's a song I missed that would be fun to record again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to hit fast forward. I tried to, like, use the record for material. And every time I went to hit the button, like, well, I'm not going to record that song, I couldn't even make my finger press it because the music was so intense.
Hmm.
And I realized, like, this music will not, it's not going to allow you to use it for any other purpose than just this, you know, affirmation of everything that was so present. And that was just a moment for me. I realized, like, wow, this music cannot be, I don't know, it cannot be relegated. It's so full. And so those kind of musicians are my heroes, so people like play like that.
Yeah. You, it's interesting the way that, I don't think, Dirk, I don't think I'd be incorrect in saying this. I don't think that there are, there's a number of people out there, musicians like yourself, but I do think it's a fewer number who are able to tap in to that and understand that real strong emotional connection at an early age. You know, I think it's something that there's a lot of musicians that learn that as time goes by,
mm-hmm.
you know, and go through different things. And it's like, oh, okay, wow, I get it now. I finally get it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's interesting because what you're talking about now is what you talked about experiencing at a really young age, where a lot of times people aren't able to, they're not able to piece that together or understand what's happening with me and whatever that form, whatever that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I recognized it very early, both
yeah.
in the sense that it was, that I was loving it and feeling it in that way, but I recognized what it was giving me.
Yeah.
Even at that very young age, that was
you understood
place.
It.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the difference. You understood it versus, no, something's going on. I just don't really quite know,
mm-hmm.
you know, or that you don't get it till you're in your 20s.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, some people talk about that with somebody like Courtney Granger, you know, an amazing singer. And everybody's going, well, how can he sing that way at such a young age? Or Aretha Franklin, who sang incredibly powerfully at a very young age.
It was.
And it's about what you've been through.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily tied to the length of time you've been alive. You know, if you've been through things that feel like they're intense and need some expression and you have that outlet for them, then it comes out in that way. And people say, oh, that's, you know, you're an old soul, or you're, you know, it's a timeless kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And in some ways that's true, but I think it's also just that ability to say, I'm going to open up the deepest place without fear of expressing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to do that. It's not easy to remove all those layers of blocks between you and your fear.
That's right. That's right. And it's interesting when you see that in young people with visual art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll see that come out. And that comment, many times it comes in, it's like, well, where'd that come from?
Mm, absolutely.
How did they know? You know, because you feel that emotion that's coming out of that painting or that piece, whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
Huh, very interesting, Dirk. You know, you brought in got a number of tracks, but I'd like to play something of yours, as long as we're talking about you right now.
Sounds good.
Do you want to let's talk, since we've been talking about your family, can we look at the Walking Through Clay first?
Sure.
Tell us a bit about that piece that you brought in.
Well, that's a song that I recorded for my new record on Sugar Hill, and it's, for me, it's kind of a style that just incorporates the totality of the music that I love. So it's a lot of electric guitars and drums. It's a pretty big sound mixed with banjos and fiddles and things like that. But the story of the song is based on my great-great-grandmother, who in the Civil War, her whole family was killed, and she was 14 years old, and she had to go work on a plantation nearby. And the owner,
was this in Kentucky?
This was in Virginia.
Oh, this is in Virginia. I'm sorry.
But,
yeah.
But right on the line, pretty much. And she, as a teenager, this guy that owned the plantation impregnated her, you know.
Yeah.
And she had to work there like she was, her family was gone. And she walked up into the mountains of Kentucky by herself and started a new family with this child, you know. And to me, the triumph of what she did is just astounding, because in one generation, she suffered the loss of her entire family and went through this experience, you know, walked like 100 miles or whatever up into Clay County, Kentucky, got taken in by a new family and had this child who was my great-grandfather. And then my grandmother, she ran away from home at 15 and went to Oneida Institute and then Berea College. And she raised my dad in Berea, and my dad went to Berea College, and then he went to MIT, and my dad went on to become president of several colleges, and he writes books, and he was president of the LA County Museum of Natural History. And, you know, so within a few generations, that arc of that just blows my mind, you know, from that level of, you know, war ravaged destruction in every way that you can imagine.
Yeah.
Within a few generations, you know, and so the song is basically about her triumph, and it's about, you know, people looking down on her because she has this child and blah, 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 blah. And just the way that she completely triumphed in every sense of the word and began this family that's my family, you know.
Yeah.
So I wanted to write a song about that. But it's you know, it's got a lot of, it's a big sounding record. It's got Patrick Keeler of the Raconteurs on drums. Mm-hmm. He plays with Jack White, and Jerry Douglas on dobro, and Mike McGoldrick, the Celtic guy. So it's kind of a huge track, but it's a different sound. But it's dedicated to her.
Very nice. Well, let's Dirk Paul, Walking Through Clay.
The doors fly wide on a reckoning day. The red birds cry and the blue ticks bay. Falls hard on a hot red clay that burns your boots like iron. Seams are weak on your flower sack dress, hair piled high in a joyful mess. You wouldn't take nothing for the cool caress, one drop of sweat on your shoulder.
sweet. Your hair hangs down in a winding sheet. Say goodbye to the wasting heat. The plains, the Grand Dominion. A lonely farm on a quiet trail. Split log fence and a fresh cut bale. Or you might succeed or you might fail. But none but God's above you. Feel your spirit rise. Sailing, but they don't see your path to victory. Walking through pain, he's got his mama's eyes. A barrel picked and a bushel peeled. Days are long in a rocky field. Thin rules that'll barely yield enough to feed a family. She carried a pail so it never drips. The dipper passes all their lips. When it's your turn, you take a sip. You let the water heal you. Feel your spirit rise. Walk through pain. Up to the sky. A quiet prayer, your heart is blessed. Place your hand on your flowering breast. Feel the life within you.
If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange, and that was Dirk Powell with a soon-to-be-release,
yeah.
Walking Through Clay. That's a, you know, here I'm like smiling, and that's a fabulous, you know, want to say, what a great song. However, you know, when I look back at the story that came from, you know, there is some, there's a lot of tough pieces to that story,
yeah.
But really it is fabulous what came out of your great-grandmother's.
Absolutely.
You know?
You know, absolutely. And the thing is also that's kind of wild is like nobody really knows the exact details of what happened. But when she was 90, she started having these kind of flashbacks to that era, you know. And she would have these sort of panic moments of that they were sneaking food up to an African-American family that was hiding in the attic.
Huh.
So not even knowing what that story is, but her – when she flashed back to that era when her family was killed during the war, the pervading memory was of sneaking food up to a family, African-American family in the attic, and being terrified of getting caught. And
wow.
Like, who knows? I have no idea if that is what happened or that was people they were close to or family, because I have some of that heritage, you know.
Sure.
So the stories are – it's kind of lost in time. But just to think about – I don't know. There's so much going on with that.
Who first told you the story about her?
Well, my aunt, who had had heard her talking about, well, those flashbacks was my aunt who had heard that as a young girl.
Yeah, but was she alive when you were born?
No.
No. So yeah. Who first started telling you about who she was? Who?
Well, I guess my grandmother had that story, and then my aunt kind of did sort of a family history of the, you know, kind of the whole thing. So that's kind of where it got the story
and
from.
Filled that in.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, what an amazing woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? It was interesting at how the song ended. You know, it's one of those songs, if you were in the audience, you know, your hands would be up and like, you know, it's one lick to sing to and yeah, you know. But which for her life.
Absolutely. That's you it. Know? That's it. And that's why the line in the song, you know, he's got his mama's eyes, you know, like
yeah.
To hell with y'all.
That's right.
Triumph.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very cool. So where did you record that at?
I recorded that in my studio here.
Ah, very nice.
And some people did some tracks around. Joanna Devine did the background vocals on that big chorus. And yeah, I mean, Jerry Douglas did his track in Nashville, you know, these days.
Sure, that you can send it back. Yeah. So when do you see that? Do you have an idea of when that will
I think it'll
come
be
out?
January or February. It's going to be out on Sugar Hill.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Oh, good for you, Dirk.
Thank you.
All right. You mentioned, and I just want to mention, too, folks that are just joining, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. We are a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Please check out the website. You can podcast so many of the shows you want to hear one again or one you missed. And you can always continue to give and to support the station. It's a very safe, secure website. So please check that out, krvs.org. My guest in the studio today, musician Dirk Powell. You know, Dirk, we've been talking about just kind of some of your earlier times in music. You mentioned about how director Ang Lee came upon you. You know, in your music. The films, I mean, you've done a number of them now, mm-hmm. you know, whether they're like Cold Mountain, you know, big full production versus some of the documentary films, which are also full productions, but different types, you know, of film. How do you go into creating music for a piece like that versus when you're going in to create music just for music's sake? How does that process work?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, working on film, again, talking about it being service of something, being in service. Film is such a collaborative form, you know, and it takes so many elements to make a complete film, dramatic and visual and, you know, sonic and music and all these things. And it's really a rewarding experience to enter into that world and try to use your music to enhance something that's already on screen. A lot of times it's a matter of intensifying emotion without actually directing emotion. You know, you don't actually want to shape somebody in a certain direction sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting challenge. How do you intensify things without altering them in any way, just bringing whatever's there to a more central point?
Yeah.
And I love doing that, and, you know, a lot of times it's just watching and feeling and trying some things and getting inspired and seeing what achieves that.
And just the time frame, you know, because I would assume as when you're working, you know, when you're working on a film, they're going to give you a time frame and say, you know, Dirk, here's what we need, but we need it by da-da-da, mm-hmm. you know, versus sometimes when you're working on some of your own creations, sometimes you have a time frame, sometimes you don't. Mm-hmm. You know, does that – have you had to learn how to work with that in terms of the time frame?
Yeah, the film world is very challenging that way, really. I mean, the film world is a world where, you know, if they need something from you, they need it yesterday.
Yeah.
And if you need something from them, you see it in 6 months or something.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
It's just that kind of thing. There's so many elements to it, you know. And that's part of their world is, you know, super early morning. I mean, you know, film people get up at 3 a.m. and work until midnight.
Yeah,
you know, they really do when they're shooting. I mean, musicians, it's hilarious when you work with musicians, especially like working with T-Bone Burnett, who was when I worked on Cold Mountain with him. And he was saying, you know, we got a lot to do. We're going to get a really early start. You know, we're going to get in there. We're going to get in there about like 11.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And Anthony Minghella, the director, who's used to starting at 3 if he
has
to, is like, whoa, man.
What do you mean 11?
Yeah. I'll be up for 8 hours by then. You know, it's pretty funny. That world is just an interesting mix, music and film. But there's a lot of people that can do both really well, but it's a work ethic. Film
That's
is
right.
a work ethic for
yeah.
sure.
Well, I want to talk about you've got and a treat for a lot of people in this area, and I do know some of them are sold out. They might all be sold out.
Not yet.
The Baton Rouge one is,
The
though.
Baton Rouge one is, but the Lafayette show still has plenty of tickets, but
well,
they're going fast.
For a treat, what a great treat. you and Joan Baez performing this weekend, this Friday night at the Feed and Seed in Lafayette. As I did say, the Saturday show at the Red Dragon in Baton Rouge is sold out. And do you know about the Sunday show in New Orleans?
It's not sold out yet. Baez on the Bayou.
Yeah, baezonthebayou.com to get your tickets, because it really is quite a unique thing not to miss, because it's going to be some pretty kind of smaller venues, not in a large, you know.
It's an intimate
performance.
Yeah, it's a very rare opportunity. I think the last time she was anywhere near here would be played in Baton Rouge, and I think she sold something like 1,200 tickets in a big theater.
Yeah.
And for these shows, you know, she wanted to come here anyway to visit some friends and have some – she loves Louisiana and have some good healing time here and just feel immersed in what we have to offer here, you know, because she loves it. And I said, well, if we're talking about that kind of energy, some positive energy, some healing, like let's make some music. That's what we do. That's how we – heal and get healed, you know, that's what we do in the world that we love. And so I said, well, why don't we put together some small theater shows just sort of last minute? And then she said, well, let's do some roadhouses and some clubs, you know?
And
that's what she wanted to do. So like you say, it's really a rare opportunity. I don't think people necessarily realize. I mean, we go around the world and play these, you know, 3,000-4,000 seat venues and sell them out, whatever. But this is a chance to see her, you know, in a tiny space. And at a moment when she really wants to be in that kind of an environment and just really
bring it,
you know.
Yeah.
And it's a rare, rare thing, and it's very cool.
So how did the two of you get connected? How did that come about?
Well, she made her last record. They kind of wanted to go back to an acoustic sound, and Steve Earle produced that record. And I've done some work with him, and just kind of when she was putting together a touring band for that, I just got a call. I mean, I kind of went through a few folks, and I got the call, and would you be interested in doing this? And I said, yeah. And at that point, it was a four-piece band, four to five-piece. But after doing that for maybe a year and a half, she decided to pare it down even more, kind of keep continuing in that direction towards her roots.
Yeah.
And so it ended up just being me and her, and sometimes her son Gabe plays percussion.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's you know, me and her.
What a great experience.
It's wonderful. I mean, I can't tell you how great it is. I mean, I'm so just thrilled to be part of it and walk on stage with her and know what she's brought to the world in so many ways, both politically and musically and in every other way. I mean, just she opens up her heart and puts it out there, and she's done it for so long and for so many of the right reasons, inspired so many people to play music and done things like marching with Martin Luther King and ended up in jail for her position on Vietnam. And you know, she's just stood firm.
That's right.
And it's not always easy to do. You know, she was in some tough situations, and she stood tall and firm and did what she wanted to do. And I just admire that aspect of her. And a lot of times we walk on stage, and she'll get a standing ovation at the beginning of the show.
Before she ever does,
anything.
And that's right. And very well deserved.
Yeah.
And nice that she has, you know, someone on there with her. You get to play a variety of instruments, too.
Yeah, I play a few instruments. Yeah, that's kind of where the color comes from, I guess.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
You brought in some cuts with you two on there.
Yeah.
You want to do – which one you want to –
Well, let's do that just the way you are. That's never been released or anything. That's a song that I wrote that she did live for a while, and this was a show that we did in Paris. It's just me and her. So yeah, it's a song I wrote that's kind of it's just exploring some emotional things, but some of it was kind of written with her in mind, some of it wasn't, but it's a thrill to have her sing a song that I wrote.
That's right. This is Dirk Powell, Joan Baez, Just the Way You Are.
Je vais chanter une chanson de Dirk qui s'appelle Just the Way You Are. They say never let them see your weakness. Never let them see you fall. But if they don't see my weakness, they might not see me at all. Maybe if I'm brave enough,
some will come and rescue me. And I just might hear them say, I need you just the way you are. I see you, you're really not that far. I want you to be by my side. And I love you, you have nothing to hide. I'm like some storefront window, always showing something new. People stop and turn and smile at me, but they're just looking through. Maybe I paint myself in mud and ash and clay. Someone will come and wash me clean. Someone who wants to hear me say, I need you just the way. Have nothing to hide. I need you just the way you are. I see you, you're really not that far. I want you to be by my side. And I love you, you have nothing to hide from me.
Very nice. If you're just joining us, that was a guest in our studio today, Dirk Powell with Joan Baez, a song that Dirk wrote. That was, boy, that was absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. Has she performed other songs of yours?
No, not really, no.
Yeah.
That's the main one, yeah.
Because, the thought that was going through my head was, well, what a cool place Dirk is at. And I wonder what it would have been like even years ago. You know, just the thought of, like, pitching a song to Joan Baez would be a little daunting.
Yeah.
You know?
yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, at the time that I played that song for her, we were just kind of starting to throw some things around and share some things, and that one resonated with her, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of, that second verse, wouldn't say I wrote it completely for her, but I did think about that a little bit in the verse that says, I'm like a storefront window, always showing something new. People stop and turn and smile at me, but they're just looking through.
Yeah.
It's not so much about her, but it is sometimes about when you're in that position of fame and a lot of people think they know you and they feel really close to you when you've given them things, you know, and they've taken them and then they feel connected to you. And sometimes that's challenging, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And they may think that they know something, but they may not. And she's actually amazing that way. She's one of the most sort of accessible people as far as striking that balance between acknowledging her own fame and who she is kind of in that position and not taking it too seriously, both at the same time.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems, you know, some stories you hear about some other folks who do that, you know, who've been able to find that balance, that whole process of really just putting it out there and not running from it and not hiding from it or trying to, you know, disguise whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, that you just be who you are.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Very cool, Dirk.
Cool.
I'm curious, since you have been performing with her, what have you learned from her in terms of performance?
I'll tell you one thing. I've learned that, you know, working hard and doing your work and being committed to it is the name of the game. I mean, she warms up for hours every day. She checks in with vocal coaches and guitar teachers. Mm. She is never satisfied. And I think all great artists are never satisfied to be where they are. They always want to improve and they always want to elevate it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just beautiful to watch her engage with her own artistry that way. And not only with music, but with painting. I mean, she's painted over the years, but she's really started painting a lot in the last 2 or 3 years. And it's unbelievable. The paintings she's doing are mind-blowing.
Yeah.
You know, and she'll take a picture and send me a picture on the iPhone of just something random, and it'll be the most beautiful photograph I've ever seen. Like, she just is that. She's just an artist.
Yeah.
And when she writes the communications, they always have that in them. You know, she's just somebody who is open to that spirit, and it's really inspiring. So that what I could say I've learned from her is, you know, just that level of commitment to it where it's just who you are, and don't ever deny yourself that.
You don't have to. You don't need to.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's an absolute inspiration that way.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let you get out of here without picking up your banjo.
Okay.
Because you were committed enough to bring it in the room.
That's right.
And to the place. You think we can get you to play something for us with that?
Yeah.
Because there would be a number of people who would be upset with me if they knew you brought that in here. And
I didn't play it.
And you didn't play it.
Cool. Well, I can play it. I'll play a little tune that my grandfather played.
Mm.
And I tell the story sometimes because, you know, you talk about those pivotal moments in your life, and I was talking about some that are kind of random, but actually this one was kind of a moment for me where he played this tune. I was probably maybe 13 or something, and I started taking the bus down there by myself. I started taking the Greyhound to go see him, and it was just great. And one time he played this tune, and he said, you know, people used to think that just that was beautiful.
Mm.
And that was a real moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
It really was one of those, okay, did the beauty of this change or have the people changed?
That's right.
And the beauty, you know, as we know, it doesn't ever change.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice statement.
It was a moment. It was a moment of like, okay, I want this music to live, not as an artifact, but as like this beautiful way to share things. Reuben, it's called. On that train and gone.
believe I'm right, you can follow me tonight. I'll show you what a poor world. Oh, me, oh, Lordy mine, I'll show you what a poor world can do.
Dirk Powell. Very nice, Dirk.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to give folks a chance to listen, since we're getting close to the end here, but to listen to one more song that you brought in.
Sure.
With you and Joan Baez. Yeah. Now, that Cornbread one intrigued me.
Yeah.
However, so did the Gospel Ship. Which one should we you pick?
Let's play Cornbread because that one's kind of a different thing. That was something I'm sure we'll do when she comes. And this was it's a song that we did in a recent T-Bone Burnett Coen Brothers special that's coming out that we filmed in New York. That's going to be on Showtime on December 16th.
Very
and
nice.
I've actually been going back, and it's me and Joan and Marcus Mumford play together. Marcus Mumford plays on Paper Bag on a Stool. Percussion.
Wow.
It's really cool. And I've actually just now been having to go back and do some banjo parts because they're going to open the whole film with a clip where I'm playing banjo by myself in the hall, just kind of plucking along, and he walks by and starts dancing, you know.
Yeah.
He starts doing these cool steps.
Yeah.
So it's actually funny. Like right now, I'm having to do that, redo this banjo part because the camera was too far away and the mic and all this stuff. But it's cool. And then when we decided whether we were kind of submitting this tune to say, well, should we do this during the show? We recorded this version, and it's just us sitting around backstage at the Sydney Opera House in Australia, like just sitting in the dressing room, just playing it for fun.
Yeah.
And it's not a very good recording, and Joan's voice is a little quiet, but it is something we sing together as a duet, and something I'm sure we'll do. And actually, when we do it live, usually me and her dance in the middle of it. We do this
very
little
cool.
Zydeco dance thing.
Yeah, yeah. Very nice.
So this is a funky recording, but it's the vibe.
All right, Cornbread.
Check the mic. 1, 2. It's working. Give me that cornbread when I'm hungry, corn whiskey when I'm hungry, baby, when I'm hungry. Give me a cold bed when I'm
Pretty women all around while I'm living. God and his angels when I die. Meow.
Okay. That was very cool.
Cool. That's our little vibe.
That's very nice. That was Dirk Paul and Joan Baez, Cornbread. Very nice. I just want to say again, this Friday, November 22nd, folks, you are in for a treat. Joan Baez with Dirk Paul at the Feed and Seed in Lafayette. Also, there are tickets available for the Sunday show at One Eye Jack's in New Orleans. You can go to BaezOnTheBayou.com.
Yeah.
And Joanna Devine opening up
that
show here.
Absolutely.
And the one in New Orleans,
And the one in New Orleans, yeah, exactly.
And that also an incredible talent.
Absolutely, yeah. A wonderful talent in many ways. I mean, she does her show here, and she's producing Local Produce Live with video here, which we're going to do with Joan. And,
oh, good.
Yeah. And great songwriter, great performer. So
Get your tickets, BaezOnTheBayou.com. That's this Friday at the Feed and Seed in Lafayette. I also want to let people know, too, to find out more about Dirk, about his history, vast history, and what he has coming up in his life. You can go to DirkPowell.org. You know what I was thinking of as I was listening to that song? Is the shows that you have coming up for those who may be listening that are in the Northern California area. With Cedric Watson.
Absolutely, yeah. I got some shows in California with Cedric, coming up in December.
Have the two of you done something, just the two of you before?
We have, yeah, and it's a total blast. I love it.
I mean, as you're listening to that song, I kept thinking, God, those guys would do some really cool, just raw stuff.
Yeah, we do some stuff like that. Actually, he plays banjo. He plays great banjo, and then I play banjo, and he plays fiddle. We do, you know, obviously Cajun Creole stuff, but we do some old-time stuff, and yeah, if you go up on YouTube and you search me and Cedric, you can see some of our duet stuff up there. But yeah, I mean, I love making music with him. He's one of the most open channel musicians I know.
Yeah. So you've got that coming up. Do you have other concerts that will be coming up with Joan Baez?
We're supposed to go to South America in late February.
Okay.
I'm going to Ireland in January to do some gigs over there.
And who are you playing with for that? Is it you?
That's me and Brendan Gleeson, who's an amazing actor who played in Cold Mountain, and he's also in like the Harry Potter series and a bunch of great movies. I mean, he's a top Irish actor. But he plays fiddle and he plays mandolin, and we kind of put together this little run of dates, him and Mike McGoldrick and me and Francis Gaffney. So we're going to just kind of roam around Ireland playing these tiny venues for about 10 days.
Yeah.
It should be really fun.
Yeah. And then the Coen Brothers, that film is, or that special that you're doing on Showtime?
The special, I think it's on December 16th, I'm pretty sure. But it's called Another Day, Another Time. And it's actually, I think it's going to be a pretty momentous show, and also the soundtrack, because it's kind of poised to do what O Brother did for kind of old time and early bluegrass. It's kind of poised to do that for early 60s Greenwich Village kind of folk song, the songwriting scene. Because if you really think about it, so much of the writing that happened in the 60s started with that spark. I mean, that wasn't really there before that. And I think that this movie is going to make people aware of how important that era was. I mean, everybody knows that to a certain degree, but I think it frames it in a way that's really going to make a big impact on American music, kind of like O Brother did. I mean, it kind of changed the course of it, you know.
Yeah, and is their name? I'm sorry, did you say? Was
Inside Llewyn Davis, or Ewan Llewyn.
That's right.
I don't know how to say it.
Cecil does.
Llewyn. It's got two L's. I don't know if the two L's become a Y. Maybe I'm speaking Spanish. I don't know.
Yeah.
Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah, so that's this.
That's the Coen Brothers movie.
That's December, yeah.
And then, the Showtime special is called Another Day, Another Time.
Okay, very nice. Again, you can find out a lot of what's going on for Dirk at DirkPowell.org. I also want to mention, too, on that website, before we have to sign off here, is a really interesting piece, if you do go to Dirk's site, to look at the adaptation work that you do with some children's stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really a nice piece.
Thanks. Yeah, I've told my daughters so many stories. I mean, I've told them 1,000 or more stories. I tell them a story every single night, you know, and or play them guitar or both. But, I mean, it's just literally every night, and made them all up. But that's been a beautiful thing in my life and beautiful for them. And it's interesting because their phase of thinking they were too grown up for them lasted for about 4 days. You know?
Interesting.
And then they went into another zone where they appreciate them from a different side. You
know,
so they're no longer kids, bedtime stories. They appreciate them in a different way.
Yeah.
So I wrote a few of them down, and they're on the website. Yeah,
check that out. Very well done. Well, we did talk about Joanna Devine, and I want to thank you for coming on.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. And everybody get out there this Friday night to the Feed and Seed. A rare opportunity to see Joan Baez with Dirk Powell. And a rare opportunity to really see Dirk Powell around here, because we don't get to see that often around here.
Cool.
So take that in. Again, Baez on thebayou.com. And we are going to go out listening to Joanna Devine, who will be opening up the show Friday night here in Lafayette, and also Sunday at One Eye Jacks in New Orleans. And this is her cut, Basin Bridge.
Baby, roll your windows down. Feel the heat and hear the sound. Get me on the radio. Play me another one I know. 18 miles end to end. 55 at Henderson. You and me will take our time. Let them pass that double line. Rolling down the Basin Bridge. Up ahead we'll see the pine. Once we cross the parish line. But these lazy cypress trees and that sweet magnolia breeze. Baby, roll your windows down. Feel the heat and hear the sound. Turn on the radio and ride with my baby by my side. Rolling down the Basin Bridge. Line.